Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming Gabrielle Clark, mother and fierce advocate for children and parents, specifically advocating for free speech rights, sex-based rights, and parental rights. When Gabrielle's daughter was captured by the gender identity industry, she implemented a program to affirm reality, eventually helping free her daughter from the clutches of the gender industry and social transition at her school. After seeing her daughter desist in her own life, Gabrielle began devoting her time and energy raising awareness about the harms of social transitioning and began fighting against the gender identity indoctrination in education. It is her mission now to help others around the globe by offering personal guidance, powerful tools, and helpful resources. Gabrielle, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you have done a tremendous amount of globe trotting around the United States and really sharing your story and helping advocate for parents. So how did you find yourself in this space? Can you kind of tell us, you know, why this space, why education, and just share with us what you can about your personal story?
Well, like I was just a mom. I'm still just a mom. Like most of us who find ourselves having to advocate and activate for our children. My son was being asked to list his identities and then attach the signifiers of privileged or oppressed to those identities. And we thought that was unfair. And we asked for relief. And they told us no.
How old was your son? Can I interrupt you? How old was your son at that time?
At the time, he was a senior in high school. And so we asked that he be opted out of that class. It was a CRT class, and we asked that he be opted out of that class. And when they refused, and they told us that if he did not complete the course, that he would fail that class, and that would prevent him from graduating from high school. Wow. So we had no other recourse but to file a lawsuit. So we filed the first federal lawsuit against woke indoctrination in America. And while I was helping my son fight for his rights, my daughter was being socially transitioned into believing that she was a boy through the SEL program.
And what is that? Can you define that for people?
Social emotional learning. Yes, social and emotional learning.
And how old was she?
She was in middle school. She was in the seventh grade.
Okay.
And at that time, I was fighting this. And so it was just unbelievable to me that this was happening to my daughter, because I was already fighting indoctrination. And luckily for me and for her, I knew the signs. I knew some of the things to look for. I knew some of what was going on wasn't right. Mm. And I got confirmation after we visited a relative with no internet for a month in the summer, when her behavior had been erratic prior to that. And when we went to visit a cousin for the summer, she went back to her normal self. Wow. And that was when I realized there's something not right here. And I ultimately had to pull my daughter out of school, and we moved from Las Vegas to Texas so that I could help her desist. And
that's drastic. That's a drastic change.
You know what? My daughter was captured by a cult.
So you talk about some of the signs that you saw that, you know, you were like, luckily I saw. What are some of those things that you saw that people may not notice?
Most of our children have been affected by the lockdown situation. Distance learning has isolated a lot of children in America. A lot of the mothers really thought that that was kind of just the normal behavior that they were going to start exhibiting because of the lockdowns. But what I realized that the behaviors that my daughter was exhibiting, the crazy costumes that she had started wearing, she had always been interested in makeup, but it went from artistry to demonic. And I say that as an atheist, okay? Like, I say that as an atheist person that, you know, I don't have a religious belief per se. I believe in Judeo-Christian values and living a lifestyle with Judeo-Christian traditions. But as far as a dogma or a doctrine that I believe in or a deity that I believe in, I don't have one. And so seeing my daughter looking like a demon on a regular basis and just the disassociation from all of the things that she had previously really cared about, her family, she wanted to exclude herself from family functions and from normal family interaction. She became very, very sarcastic and snarky, which wasn't her personality at all. She had always been kind and loving and embracing. And so watching that happen, that was really, I felt like, oh man, you know, my daughter, she's turning into a nightmare of a teenager. I think a lot of parents thought that too. I think a lot of parents whose children have desisted, they thought that this was just the new normal for children, for teenagers because of their isolation through the lockdowns. But when I realized that these behaviors that my daughter was exhibiting, the nihilism and all of those kinds of things, the self-deprecating remarks, all of that stuff that she was engaged in, it wasn't real. When I took her to a relative's house over the summer and she went back to being her normal self, loving and caring and supportive and inquisitive, just a bright person, a bright child. Mm-hmm. That was when I realized something is not right. Something is amiss. And when we went back to our home, she you know, was able to get back on the internet and get back into her social media. And I could see some of the behavior starting to return. But then when she went back to school, that was when I realized it's not just the social media. It's not just her friends. It's affirmation from the school. And at that point, that was when the more severe things started to happen. You know, claiming that she was suffering from severe psychological medical conditions, you know, night terrors and hearing voices and things like that. Things that I knew she wasn't suffering from because she sleeps 12 hours a night and you don't do that if you have night terrors. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. she was claiming to have psychological conditions that would have incapacitated her. So I knew that that wasn't, I knew that that wasn't happening to her. And she, you know, started engaging in self-harm, cutting and scratching and that sort of thing. I knew that that was not normal for what was going on with the lockdowns. And I knew that it had something to do with her school.
Yeah.
And so I had to take action.
Wow. So what did you do?
Well, first I tried to figure out what it was that was going on with my daughter. And I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. And I tried to remedy the situation while we were still there, but I quickly realized that once I made it clear to her school about my feelings, that might trigger a parental rights situation.
Yeah.
And so I started to look for some kind of clue as to whether or not the school really knew that I knew what was going on. And I started to try to pay more attention to what they were saying, what they were doing, reading every single thing that they sent home, you know, going over everything I could to try to figure out what exactly was happening to my daughter. And when I heard an administrator call her by a boy's name, that was when I said, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
Enough of that. And so I devised a plan, an escape plan, very similar to the way to what you would do if you were leaving an abusive relationship, and solicited the help from some of my relatives, some of my distant relatives that live in my hometown of Houston. And we escaped from Las Vegas, and I brought my daughter home to my family, and we plotted a course of action to help her understand what is real and see the reality of the situation, that she is not a boy, that she is, you know, she is gender nonconforming. She just because she, you know, sleeps with a ratchet set in her bed, and she does, it's very bizarre. You know, going in there and folding up her blankets and stuff and going, why do you need this in your bed? And she's like, I was doing something and I fell asleep. Okay, sure. You know, that doesn't mean that she's a boy. It means she's a badass girl. You know, because she can put my dishwasher together and install my range. All of those things that she does, that she's done.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make her a boy. It makes her a badass girl.
I like that. So how did she, okay, I have so many questions. So I'm unaware in Nevada or Las Vegas, the laws around, you talked a little bit about your parental rights. And I know that on the West Coast, that's a very real thing, that kids can be removed from their parents because the parents aren't agreeing with the social transition. Is that the case also where you were? And could you just, for people who aren't familiar, because I don't think some parents in different parts of the country understand really what's at stake here, and parents losing their children for this. So could you go a little bit more in depth in your location and then just specifically about that?
Right. So on the West Coast, particularly California, Washington, those states, if you don't affirm, your child can be taken away from you because you're deemed quote unquote unsafe. And this has been utilized in these states more than you would imagine. One of the reasons why I started speaking out about what happened to my daughter was because I saw Abigail Martinez, another mother, give her testimony at a Heritage Foundation lecture. And when I saw her talk about how her daughter had been taken away and given testosterone and her subsequent suicide, I was beside myself. I knew that I couldn't be silent about that. I too was very fearful that if I did not affirm my daughter, that her school would activate CPS against me. I had heard of it happening before. I had not seen it happen in Las Vegas, but I didn't want to be the test subject either.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to be patient zero for this craziness. So I, you know, preemptively decided to take that action off the table, take that out of the equation.
Yeah.
And rescue my daughter from what would have been or what could have been the removal of my parental rights through the Child Protective Services. It has happened. 122 children have been Baker acted. That's a 72-hour site hold in Pasco County, Florida, because of reasons. How many people in the world do you know that have had to be forcibly hospitalized for 72 hours in your life? How many have you ever met in your life has that happened to? Well, how did 122 children in one single county in Florida, how did that happen? What's in the water in Pasco County, Florida, that's making the children crazy?
I don't mean to laugh. I think sometimes I have to laugh to keep, you know, to keep.
It's laughable. It is. Yeah. It's laughable. It's insanity. It's insanity. It's comical to think that this is what our lives have come to. You know, this is the way that our lives are going. We've been considered domestic terrorists because we don't want our children to live under the delusion that they were born in the wrong body. Yeah. And so because of that, we have had to take some very drastic measures to keep our children from being taken away from us. And some of the parents weren't that lucky. Some of the parents did lose their parental rights. There have been families split up, you know, torn apart by this, and divorces and all of those kinds of things, just completely tearing up the entire family because of trans ideology, because of gender ideology. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to let anybody take my daughter.
Yeah. And you had the support of your family in Texas, which sounds like a godsend, really.
You can't do, I mean, I coach parents into, you know, on how to pull their children out of this cult. And one of the things that I tell them is you have to have at least three people to really do this effectively. You know, and it certainly can be done with one. I met a mother who took her daughter and they went and just in the woods and became kind of survivalists for a few months to let her daughter really touch nature and see what real really is and affirm the reality of our lives. That is an extreme position, but she wanted her daughter back. And, you know, her daughter desisted and is now a mother, a wife and a mother. So, you know, there are children who are able to desist on their own. Unfortunately, it's becoming increasingly clear to a lot of us that if your child goes to school, public school in particular, but private schools, parochial schools, charter schools, all of those schools, a lot of them still have adopted this gender ideology into their curriculum and into the praxis so that they don't really have any recourse other than to pull their children out and homeschool them or just take them and move. Mm-hmm. And I advise parents to do that if they live in a state where the Children's Protective Services can be activated against them, I tell them, get your kids out and move. There have been some parents that I have not been able to help because their children are, unfortunately, have suffered some very serious psychological, emotional damage from all of this. And, you know, there's nothing that I can do at that point. You know, that's something that needs to be taken to a child psychologist or child psychiatrist. Because, you know, you can only do so much as a parent, but once it gets to be really bad, then you have to get somebody who's more qualified than myself.
Yeah. Well, and even then though, still it's hard because so many of the child psychiatrists and therapists are drinking the water as well, or drinking the Kool-Aid as well. And I talked to Stephanie Nguyen, who is a therapist, and she talks about this, and she has, you know, there's very few that are willing to speak against it. So you talk about a lot about how you had to affirm reality in your daughter. I have several questions. So first, my first question is, what did that look like? And did you meet resistance with your daughter? And how did that work out? And then two, my other thing was a little bit unrelated, but how do parents say, okay, I have a daughter who isn't school age yet, but how do I recognize, or what do I look for in a school? Because you talked about the SEL, and to me, that sounds great. Social emotional learning. That sounds like exactly what I want my daughter to have, right? So how can parents identify what their schools are teaching and what their kids are learning? So those are my two follow-up questions. They're both unrelated, so you can do one or the other or neither.
They're actually related.
Okay.
They're actually related. So to both of those things, I would say, you know, I developed a way to spot a lot of this, which is called parallel language messaging. So if your school is engaging in doublespeak and gaslighting and using flowery language for things, giving you the runaround, you know, word salads and word cyclones, all 10 of the logical fallacies, when giving definitions without really defining anything, you know what I'm saying? Rebranding old ideas, old harmful ideas, like saying things like gender affirming care. You mean mutilation? Like, I mean, you know, like, is that what you're saying? You know, I mean, those kinds of things. If you can spot the parallel language, they're using English words, they're using them appropriately, but somehow it just doesn't seem to mesh. It just doesn't seem to make sense. It seems off somehow. That's parallel language messaging. And if you learn how to speak it and you learn how to engage with them, then you'll get the truth. And that's exactly how I was able to help my daughter. I learned how to speak the language. So I learned how to speak it back to her. And I learned how to dispel myths and dispel the assertions that she had made, because I learned how to speak the language and I learned how to translate it and I learned how to talk it back to her. And yes, there was resistance. You know, there's going to be resistance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I tell my parents, hey, look, there might be a shattered window here and there, or, you know what I mean? Some throwing and some screaming and some door slamming, you know what I mean? Because they've been captured by a cult, and the cult has told them to go no contact. The cult has told them that you are not safe, that you won't accept them, that you would try to confuse them and all of those things. Mm-hmm. The Darvo is also another tactic. So all of those things, you learn them, you learn how to translate them, and you learn how to speak it back to them. Mm-hmm. So, and that will help you with both things, learning mm-hmm. how to pull your children out of the cult, but also learning how to spot the issues going on with a particular school district or with a particular school or even with a particular teacher. And learning how to spot that so that you can then take action. It also is helpful when you're teaching your children, inoculating them from this. You teach them, you know, about safeguarding measures and boundaries. All of those things they all fall under the parallel language messaging. You teach your children, if somebody says, not tell your parents, or we can keep this from your parents. That is a dangerous person. And you need to come and tell me immediately. You know, those are the kinds of teacher children, if they're asked to say something or do something that they're not comfortable with, then they need to immediately ask to speak to their parent. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the kinds of things that I advocate for and that I coach parents on how to address the manipulation of the language.
So how do you respond? I've seen quite a bit on like Twitter and other social media sources, like kids don't feel safe going to their parents. And if the parents really were a safe place, then kids would feel comfortable being able to say that I'm actually a boy, not a girl, or I'm actually this or that, or I have this sexual preference, but the kids aren't feeling safe to do so. And that's why they're hiding it. What's your response to that? Because I see that a lot as kind of the pushback. Like, we have to hide this from parents because parents aren't safe.
Then I say, stay the hell away from my kids, you groomer. I mean, like,
okay.
You know, that kind of language is exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. That is asinine. The parents are the number one safest space. You know, I mean, and we talk about safeguarding and boundaries for strangers, but now state-sanctioned strangers are telling our children that they need to be safeguarded against their parents.
Yeah.
You know, and I say this too, if a parent truly is being neglectful or being a danger to their child, that first and foremost, you should be calling CPS, not telling the child to keep things from their parent, and not telling the child that their secrets are safe with them. If you feel that a child is in danger as an educator, then you are duty bound to alert the proper officials and the proper authorities. And if there is anything other than that, If there's anything else other than neglect or any kind of mistreatment under the law, then you shouldn't be advising or teaching someone's children, because that doesn't fall into safety. That falls into ideology. And it's none of your business how I raise my kid. I don't tell other people how they should and shouldn't raise their children. And so how I decide to raise my children is my business. And they're going to grow up with their own minds. They're not with my influence any more so than anyone else's. And that's how I choose to raise my children. I choose to raise my children to be independent thinking. But if there's a religious family and they choose to raise their children with their religious beliefs, that is their decision. It's not an educator's decision to make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to back up just for a second, because I'm curious, but how did your lawsuit end up? Or is there an outcome yet with your son? And then was this the same school system or is this a different school system?
They were both charter schools.
Oh, okay.
We're both charter schools. And I am bound by an NDA, so I can't really discuss a whole lot, but I will say, we were successful.
That's great. So why do you think then, we'll shift gears back. Why do you think then so many young people, especially girls, it seems, are being captured by this? What do you think is driving it?
I think that the capitulation of the language to woke ideology has turned body dysmorphia associated with puberty into some sort of identity crisis, which is not true. The majority of the girls the parents of the girls that I've spoken with, the vast majority have said that their child didn't experience any gender dysphoria. Not in its current description. They didn't like their body changing. They didn't like what puberty was doing to their body. Mm-hmm. But the remedy for that is to allow puberty to run its course, not to pump your body full of poisons to stop it. So, you know, or even if you don't take that tack, even if it's just staying in the social, transitioning, even just social transitioning is harmful. You know, it warps their worldview and it warps their perception of themselves. It disembodies them from their own, from their own being, from their own agency. And they're not allowed to let things happen naturally. They're not allowed to let their minds and their bodies work together to come to grips with what's happening. And that is it's a dangerous thing. It makes them self-conscious and hypervigilant about their appearance, about how other people see them, instead of growing into it. You know, a friend said, you have to let the kids grow up so the glow up will show up.
Aww.
So, and that's, you know, that's one of the things that this cult is teaching our daughters, that if you're uncomfortable with your body, then you're somehow born in the wrong body, or you're gender dysphoric or whatever. I was an awkward teenager. I was an awkward teenager, developed early, all of those things, got a lot of attention that was probably unnecessary attention, all of that stuff. And you grow up and you come to grips with, you know, living comfortably in your own skin. Mm. That's what we should be teaching our children,
yeah.
But we're not. And the girls are really, I would say the girls are really having some serious psychological problems because of it.
So tell us more about your program and your one-on-one coaching. Are most of the parents that you speak with and coach, are they parents of girls or boys, both? And just tell us overall just more about your program and how people can get involved and what you do.
So I run a coaching service called AffirmingReality.com. This was not my first choice of career moves, but I was getting so many questions, and I was getting really so many requests for help, because I did have a strategic program, and it's a series of phases and steps on how to step down and out of the social media addiction, and then step out of the cult. So mm-hmm. step, you know, and doing all of those things step by step was imperative in order to learn more about my daughter, which is what I coach other parents. The majority of what I do is teach them how to learn about their children and then to move forward accordingly, because everybody is different. Even though a lot of the way that the children got into it is very similar. So, you know, it usually starts out as, oh, I'm bi, you know, and then non-binary, and then they're trans. It's, you know, and it happens over the course of a few months, sometimes, you know, a little less time between each phase. And so we learn how to understand our children. I teach them how to listen to what it is that their kids are saying and interpret the things that they're saying so that they can address each issue. I mean, some of the things are kind of silly. Like a lot of the girls have like they don't shave, you know, they don't shave in protest of their the social standard of shaving, you know, mm-hmm. even though some of the girls had done so before. And so I teach the parents how to interpret whether or not this is a personal preference or if this is something that they're just doing just because, you know, just because it's part of the ideology, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that I do that is I tell the parents, okay, tell them that they won't smell as, you won't smell it as bad if they shave. If they shave their armpits, it won't stink as bad. And if they shave, then you know it's a personal preference, right? Like, it's just, sometimes it's just silly stuff like that. But then there's other things that are very serious, like the self-harm and the cutting and all of those things, in which case I refer the parents to therapists that are not gender affirming. And we find therapists that are going to help the children without being affirming. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go to the therapist and the therapist is going to teach them that they shouldn't be trans. That's not how that works. But they help them without affirming, mm-hmm. in the traditional fashion of therapy.
They figure out underlying issues.
Right. Figuring out the underlying issues and addressing those issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what the coaching service offers. Solutions, practical solutions to the individual problems for individual families, mm-hmm. so that they can help their children, give their children enough room and the tools that they need to desist on their own, to come to the realization that they are not born in the wrong body.
Yeah. To affirm reality, right?
Affirm reality. That's right.
Yeah. It sounds like you are just kind of a lighthouse or beacon of hope amidst, like, you know, I've spoken to a lot of parents who are going through this in the work that we do in the creation of our film, Detransition Diaries, Saving Our Sisters, and now our newer film that we're working on, focusing on young men. And then our very first film, Can't Forget, but Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? And that we talk to parents. It just feels overwhelming at first. They feel like nobody is on their team. They right. know that they know their kids more better than anyone else. They're yes. not terrible people who are trying to abuse their children. They're trying to love and support their child where they're at. But they're just, it's like they're in this fog, and they've got maybe teachers and other professionals telling them that their child is born in the wrong body and all these things. And there's nowhere to turn. And then they see your lighthouse, you know, it's like, come, you know, I can help you. And I think that that's great. I think that's awesome that you're offering this for parents. So we'll include the link in the intro to this. And I'll just say it again, it's affirmingreality.com. If you are a parent who is struggling right now and are trying to help their child, or you know someone, you can also follow Gabrielle on Twitter at GabsClark5. But yeah, I think this is an excellent thing that you're offering parents. And as someone who's walked through this and knows the language, and it really sounds like you got on your daughter's level. You loved her. You tried to learn from her. You tried to talk in terms that she could understand. And I think that's amazing. You didn't just, you know, you did, you had to remove her from the situation. But then yes. you also just like got on her level, like, okay, you know, and I just think that's wonderful.
You have to. A lot of parents really, they think that they know enough about their children. They really do. And you know, in another time, maybe that would have been true. But now we have people in our kids' heads telling them different, mm-hmm. you know, telling them differently than what we've taught them. And trying to make them unlearn all of the things that we taught them. So you don't really know what's going on in your kids' minds until you really engage with them. And it's not easy. It is not easy.
Especially during a time where girls feel probably the most confusion, right? Puberty is a time of not confusion in the sense of, well, whatever, but yeah, confusion in the sense of, you know, your emotions are crazy. One minute you're feeling this, the next you're feeling that. There's this like weird shame thing that goes on, and you don't know who to trust. You're starting to like people differently. And yeah, it's a big, and then you've got the voices, something I didn't have to grow up with like social media, and someone's eyes kind of always on you. So, So do you have hope? Do you see parents and children fighting back, like raising their voices against what's happening in schools? And where do you stand now?
I do have hope. I think that this is, listen, I find lawyers for detransitioners. I find lawyers for detransitioners. I try to find lawyers for other parents who want to use lawfare like I did, in order to fight back. I help encourage people, encourage our legislators, and give them, as much of my testimony as I can so that they can move forward with legislation that's going to help in the southeastern United States. Gender affirming care has been banned, for minors, in various different ways, but still no puberty blockers, no cross sex hormones, and no gender surgeries for minors. And that has been a huge win for our country. They just like they've done all, in other countries in Europe, they've also banned it. So yes, I see the hope. I see the hope in parents whenever I tell them, whenever I'm talking to them and I'm teaching them how to move forward, and they go, oh gosh, I never really thought about it like that. I never would have thought to do that. And so they see how they have to just shift their thinking just a little bit in order to parent their children in this current society. And I see hope. I see that more parents are starting to understand that they can't just, hand their kid a cell phone and send them out the door and think that they are safe because they have communication. The cell phone has become a real danger to most of our children, in some form or another. So teaching parents how to think differently about child rearing in this time, I see how it is going to shake out when more parents realize what it is that we're up against and how they need to fight. I've activated a million parents across this country, and they're pissed off, and they're not gonna relent. And I see that as a win.
Yeah. Just today I was opening Twitter and was seeing parents protesting at different board meetings. And I do think, at the end of our first film Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender, the doctor talks about how lawsuits are going to be the driver of change. And I think that that's very true. But I also think that it's parents. I think it's parents getting, like you said, pissed off and showing up. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to maybe pull kids out of school before that happens. But hopefully we can make some changes, and education will turn around. So what do you think, if a parent is listening, or a relative or anyone, what's the most important thing that's going to drive the change to you? What is one thing that you would say to parents, maybe if they're kind of in the fog or they're walking through this, or they know someone who is?
If you follow me on Twitter, and I don't know if I would recommend that because, my Twitter persona is a little aggressive,
but no,
if you follow me on Twitter, my position on fighting back and fighting back aggressively, that is what I tell parents that you absolutely must do. If your child is being discriminated against at school, or if your child is being socially transitioned at school without your permission, without your knowledge, all of those things. If you follow me on Twitter, I say it all the time. Sue they draws off. Sue they draws right on off. Don't just take it. You know, our legal system is there to not only protect us, but to give us an avenue for a remedy. Mm-hmm. And the civil laws exist so that if we are having a dispute, we have a way to fight back legally. And I say do everything legally possible to fight back against this. If you're a parent, sue they draws off. And don't stop until you get the result that you need. But other than that, I would say everybody needs to activate. You need to engage in activism so that there is a public record of your dissent. I've engaged in all kinds of demonstrations, protests and speaking out publicly, school board meetings, all of those things. All of those things, you have to do them in order to make the kind of noise that they're going to hear. You know, hit them in their wallets, but also, you know, get the public behind you. You would be surprised at how many people think the same way that you do and will come out and help and come out and stand with you. But you just, you know, you just have to stand up. If everybody starts standing up, then this will cease to be a problem in our society.
Crazy to me too, just in the space, I'm on the West Coast, so it's, I feel like in our news or in my sphere, but it, when I talk to different parents, it's just crazy to me, some who don't realize that this is going on or they don't think it's going on in their backyard or, so sometimes I think it has to become personal before they see that they need to do or say something, but I appreciate having you. And I think parents appreciate having you as a resource and as a coach and as someone who is fighting. Is there anything else? We're running out of time, but is there anything else that you'd like to say or encourage parents with before we go?
I would say activate yourself. Activate yourself. And if you need help, get it. You know, there are resources, and anybody can reach me at affirmingreality.com. You can also reach me on Twitter. That's my hub. That's where I do most of my postings and things. You can fight back. You don't just have to take it. We're a voting block now. You know, parents are a voting block, and they weren't before, but we are now. So protest, vote, get active, activate yourself and fight back.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I'll just add to that on your Twitter handle. Again, that's at GabsClark5. There's an option. You have a pinned tweet to buy you some coffee, you know, support your work. And I think that it's important for us to all support folks who are giving of their resources and their time to help keep kids safe, keep children safe, and to help parents. So if you're able, I just encourage you to go on and support Gabrielle and her work because she is a lifeline for folks. It's been an absolute privilege to have you on the show to talk about your story and your work. I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with me and with those who are listening. Again, like I said, you can follow Gabrielle on Twitter at GabsClark5, GabsClark5. And then you can find more again at affirmingreality.com. And then you also have a Twitter handle for that as well. That's at affirmreal, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's at AFFIRMREAL. So those are three ways you can get involved. And the website's absolutely beautiful. It's very easy to navigate and to find her. So again, thank you so much for coming on our show and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And of course, I'd like to thank all of our listeners and our subscribers for tuning in. Please share the work of the CBC and the work of Venus Rising, because our goal as ever is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage you all to think beyond masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.